You're listening to The Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer. Now live in the studio, local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome to The Money Hour with Mitchell Mercer, the Saturday, October 20th show. I am Tina Mitchell, Mortgage Diva, and sitting to my left is my co-host, the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer.
Good to see you, Tina. How are you?
Good. I'm excited for our day today.
Me too.
Thank you for taking time with us to talk money. Mike and I are here every Saturday on AM 1090 at 3 p.m. We're dedicated to our listeners, providing you with the tools needed to make informed decisions on matters that affect everything regarding your money. Mike, who do we have in studio today?
Well, we have two guests. The first guest is Aaron Hack, and he is with Accord Real Estate Team, division of Keller Williams. And Aaron's going to be talking to us about investing. He works with a lot of clients and is also an investor himself. And then we also have Kim Dales, who's the managing broker at the Sandpoint Windermere. And Kim's been in real estate for, 11, 12 plus years, has a very interesting background, and she's going to be talking about multiple offers. So she's going to speak directly to people without any holding back and to tell whether they're a seller.
Ooh,
or
that sounds great.
Yeah, I told her, I said, just unleash on these people. So she's going to talk to us about when you get into a multiple offer situation, whether you're a seller or a buyer, what to expect and how to handle that. So
today's all focused on real estate.
Today's all about real estate.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exciting. Mike, it's that time.
It
money
is that
chat.
Time. I feel it. So, Tina, for my part in Money Chat today, I want to talk about a couple things. This was an article I found on MSN Money, and it caught my attention. It was titled, "The Three Nasty Credit Card Marketing Traps." And you'd think when it comes to credit cards, it would just be common sense, right? You'd think we'd all kind of get it by now, but
I would think they still have some traps out there. I want to hear them.
Oh, they're constantly coming up with new traps.
I'm sure they are.
And those shiny commercials that they have. But here's what the article said. It said, new card offers can be like credit catnip, but always be aware that credit card issuers, they're not making these offers to do us any favors, right? So here's what we need to know before we sign up. So it all kind of started moving back a couple years, shortly after the recent financial crisis hit. You know, credit card issuers began tightening their requirements. So consumers, meanwhile, kind of decided that they really didn't need to deal so much with credit card debt, right? But now, believe it or not, consumer confidence is returning, and which is great, mm-hmm. but credit card issuers, their fortunes are now starting to improve. So according to J.D. Power and Associates, the average credit card holder has a higher balance now, or just this past June, than they did a year ago in June 2011. So, you know, we're already starting to creep back again with credit card balances. So with consumers ready to dip their toes back into credit waters, mailboxes are filling with credit card offers again, the article said. As you can consider signing up for some of these new plastic offers, watch out for these credit card marketing traps. So, Tina, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Ready for trap number one?
Trap number one.
A promise of a low APR. So, we've all seen this, right?
They always are making those promises.
I know. So in order to get you to apply for a card, issuers will use large bold type proclaiming the lowest possible annual percentage rate offered by the account terms, right? So this rate can often be as low as you'll see 9.9%.
Okay.
But you need to be aware that not everyone, of course, qualifies for that sexy, attractive rate.
Of course not.
And indeed, the lowest rate is reserved for only the people with the best credit scores. So look on the back of the credit card application. You're
What's the best credit score? You have an 850?
850, yes.
Probably.
Yes. I think 851. So look on the back of the credit card application you're considering. You should find a list of fees and interest policies there, right? The smaller print, of course, smaller, could show an interest rate as high as almost 21%. That means that instead of getting the low interest rate in the big type, bold, sexy font, you could end up with a much higher rate depending upon your credit situation. Even if you do qualify for a low APR, the rate may not be fixed. So look for the language that indicates the rate is variable or can change with market conditions. Now, that's something I've never really heard of.
Yeah, and that I've heard that one not too long ago as well, that they just, what's happening in the economy? Nothing to that person's personal financial situation, but the economy is having some risk, then the credit cards are going to raise the interest rates. Who would have thought?
Right. So you're making all your payments on time.
Yeah.
You carry low balances. You've got a
perfect credit.
An 851 credit score like myself, right?
But the economy's tanking.
And
so your credit card rates are going up. Yeah.
It doesn't work like that in the mortgage business. If so.
Other way around, if the economy's going bad, the interest rates go low. So
the best way to avoid the rate trap is to pay off your balance each month. Okay, we all know this. Then it won't matter what the interest rate is. Okay, trap number two, a generous rewards program. And I personally am seeing more and more TV commercials about rewards programs. So let's go into that. Credit card issuers like to market rewards programs to potential account holders. They might offer up to 5% cash back or what seems like an insane amount of bonus airline miles when you sign up. We all know this when we're trying to fly on Alaska, right? Before we land, we're getting pitched for credit cards. So on rewards cards, you want to make sure you understand the program. In some cases, you receive that 5% cash back, but only on rotating categories. Other credit card reward programs require you to meet a certain threshold. One card even requires that you spend at least $3,000 a year in order to get access to the 1% cash back on your purchase. And don't forget to check for caps on the rewards you can earn. There's all kinds of like hidden stuff, right? So be wary, too, of promises of 40 to 50,000 airline miles when you sign up for that credit card. While that number may sound like a lot, remember that miles and points don't directly translate into large rewards. It can take all those bonus miles just to pay, so it can take up to 40 to 50,000 bonus miles just to pay for a single round trip ticket. And you may face, of course, blackout dates and other restrictions. So before you sign up for a credit card just for the rewards program, make sure you assess the situation, of course, and the true value of the rewards. Often, your best bet is a straightforward, unlimited cashback program. Take full advantage of the card by using it for everyday purchases, but then be smart, as we all know, and then just pay off the balances each month, if it were just that easy, right? Okay, the last bullet point here for these marketing traps, number three, Tina, it is 0% APR balance transfers.
I love those 0% transfers.
So, okay, we'd be lying if we said that we've never taken advantage of these before. We all have. Okay, a balance transfer can be a great way to pay off debt at a faster rate, but you need to be cautious with such offers. First of all, you might not be approved for a higher enough limit to consolidate all your credit debt. Second, what the credit card issuer's marketing materials don't highlight, amazingly enough, is the balance transfer fee. So somewhere on the application, probably on the back, likely in the small print next to an asterisk, the credit card issuer will reveal its balance transfer fee. It's likely to be 3% or 5% of the balance amount that you transfer. Under these terms, if you transfer, let's say, $5,000, you would pay a fee of $150 at 3% or $250 at 5%. So of course, if your current credit card has a high enough interest rate, you could still come out ahead by paying the balance transfer fee, but you should be aware of the cost so that you can decide whether a balance transfer would make financial sense for you. You also need to plan to pay off the balance before a regular interest rate kicks in. So check the length of the introductory period. The balance transfer offer might extend the 0% rate for only 6 months, right? So look for a longer period if you have a higher balance or need extra time. Remember that your interest rate will jump at the end of the period, so be sure to pay off your balance by then, even if the credit card issuer hopes that you won't. Really? They would hope that we wouldn't pay it off?
I guess not.
Why would they hope that?
They want to make money.
So don't miss a payment or be late. Your 0% rate offer becomes void if you make one of those little mistakes, which you know they're banking on that people do. So before you apply for a 0% APR balance transfer, be sure you've crafted a plan that works for you. To give yourself a cushion, try to arrange your finances so you've paid off the balance before the end of the introductory period. All right, that makes sense. A new credit card can be a great way to take advantage of new opportunities, but don't let marketing gimmicks blind you to the fact that credit card issuers are betting against that you will be financially savvy. And that's why we're here, right?
Yeah.
To remind people.
Absolutely.
So that's all I got.
On that, Mike, I want to say that I'm all about borrowing, using the bank's money and not using mine. I am a firm believer in taking full advantage of a 0% interest and leaving my money sitting, canceling out interest on other debt for as long as I can. You just need to pay it off every month. Now, I like the trick on the balance of the 0%. Here's a couple things, and we've talked about it in studio before in credit miss or credit knowledge, understanding how FICO score works, being that 30% of your FICO score is represented by the ratio that you owe. You need to be really careful when you're doing those transfer balances that you're not transferring it to where what you owe is 30% available to the credit limit to you. That's right. A big one. And really, when you go over that 50%, it's going to be devastating. So just a little knowledge there. And I want to know how credit cards can offer rewards. Mortgages can't offer rewards. We can't like give somebody something to come do a mortgage with us.
No.
You know, when are the credit card companies going to get a little more regulated? Because I think they had a big, big impact in a part of the mess that the economy was in, borrowing all of that debt, not understanding they were paying 20% interest rate.
Yeah, well, anyways. Plus it's been 30 years since we've had mortgage interest rates at 20%.
Oh my gosh, please do not get there. So also on Money Chat, I just wanted to bring up a housing boom. Who out there that's listening right now thinks that we're in or coming close to a housing boom? Are we having housing boom right now? I don't think that we're anywhere near it yet. I'm just going to put out my own personal opinion right there. But if you feel that the market is nearing the bottom, real estate's a good investment, but so are the sectors that will benefit from a strong housing market. Stocks of home builders are up triple digits from just a year ago. Now we're going to hear a couple contradicting opinions on whether we're in a housing boom. Let's listen to a clip from Robert Shiller, one of the creators of the S&P Case-Shiller Report.
Welcome, Robert Shiller. And I think, you know, this is the bastion of capitalism you are visiting. And another area of capitalism to the average guy on Main Street is the investment in his house. Right. You know, pretty much the biggest investment he has. Do you think housing has bottomed?
I've been reserving judgment because we've seen rallies that fizzle before. It's not, once it gets going, it has a lot of momentum. But right now it could be partly seasonal. And it's just not clear yet.
We have had a lot of false starts, and you're right, there's seasonalities. You know, I remember Mr. Greenspan in 05 and 06 many times and even earlier saying you don't have to worry about housing in terms of correlations. Everything's so dissimilar. There's so many houses across the country. That probably staved off the bubble effects for a while until it gained traction. Then it was a big rock falling. How is that going to play out if we're bottoming when it tries to go back the other way?
We have rallies in Phoenix and San Francisco. The question is this really nationwide? In the last few months, it looks like it. But are we going back to the early 2000s where the correlation across markets got really strong? I don't know yet. It's just too soon to tell.
Now here, where everybody trades everything, including houses, is tradable in their minds. And my analogy is, if we think we are bottoming,
the question
is, okay, I'm going to buy them because it's going to rally. If we're bottoming, that doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a liftoff, does it?
Well, I think, look at the last housing cycle. It peaked around 1990, and it started falling only a little bit. It wasn't as dramatic a cycle that time. But then how long did it take to take off again? It was a decade. So we've been going down for 6 years now. That's why I don't want to just change
quickly.
I mean, it might still be going down. And we have a lot of world economic problems that are staring at us right now. The IMF just came out with this report about an alarming slowdown in the world. So I don't know that I just don't see the reason to call this yet a major turning point.
So that was Robert Shiller. And it's interesting to see all of these expert opinions out in the market and what's happening in all areas of money and financing. Today we're talking about real estate. Exact opposite opinion is former U.S. Deputy Treasurer, Secretary, and current Chairman of Evercore, Roger Atman, argues that we are in a new housing boom and it is already upon us. He says that the market is now and should be a full-blown boom in 2015. Atman says that home prices will exceed their 2006 peak by 2015. So let's take a look at that. Property values on an average back in 2004 levels is kind of where we're at now. I mean, I'd be interested to get the opinion from our experts here in studio today when we get them on mic. But I think on an average, we're kind of right now in our market, we're back to where the prices were in 2004 levels. So that means if you purchased a home in 2004 for $300,000, you might be right back at the value of $300,000. So from 2004 to the peak of 2006, depending on your local market, and I want to be really cautious there because every market is different. We're in an amazing market here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. But depending on the market, the average increase from 2004 to 2006 was probably around 30%. So a $300,000 home in 2004, if it went up back to the peak in 2006, means that it needs to increase 30% to $390,000 by 2015. So what that means is we have to see an average 10% increase for the next 3 years. I don't know about you, Mike, but I don't think that we're seeing or that we're going to see in the next few years a 10% increase. So I'm more citing on Robert Shiller's comment. Now, what I do think is especially in our market here, that we've absolutely hit bottom. No crystal ball, nobody can say what's going to happen, but I feel that we're seeing everything around us that we've gotten really close to hit bottom. I just personally don't think that we're going to see any major recovery or getting back to the normal appreciation. Historical trends and normal appreciation in market is a consistent 5% a year. And what I always go back to is if you look at history, real estate always follows employment. So if you just ask yourself when you feel that the employment is going to recover, real estate's going to follow.
Right.
So my guess is we're another 5 years out. Call to action here. I'm not saying that now is not the time to buy, because I think now is the time to buy. You can get an awesome price. We've hit, I feel, low bottoms. Who knows if interest rates are going to get any lower? I have a hard time seeing that they are. We're in historical, once again, all-time low interest rates. I think there's a risk of inflation that I brought up last week in Money Chat. With risk of inflation, it's the arch enemy to interest rates. So with inflation, interest rates go up. Take advantage of the market now if you plan on keeping your property and not going out there and trying to flip it in the short term, or if you're looking at investing and then reinvesting, now is an awesome time to get in the market. On that note, go to themoneyhour.com. Mike and I are doing another buyer power workshop, and our next workshops, Mike, are coming up on
Thursday, November 8th is the first one, and then the following Tuesday, which is, I believe, is the 13th.
Okay, November 13th, yep, and we're having it at the Coral Restaurant, so we're going to serve you some dinner. It's really geared towards renters that want to take advantage of being homeowners, as well as those move-up buyers. There's some awesome programs available in the market. So go to themoneyhour.com, go to our Buyer Power Workshop. You can register right online, or you can always give the show a call at 1-888-776-1090. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090. And Mike and I just love the opportunity to meet face-to-face with some of our listeners. So we'll be there conducting the workshop personally ourselves. Mike?
If you personally are not in a position to be looking at buying, just make sure that you know, you spread the word about this program, because this is a unique thing that you and I are going to be launching off to the public to welcome anybody who wants to come to it, right?
Yep.
So we would encourage you guys to, if you know of somebody that you think might be interested in taking advantage of some of these programs, definitely get them the information. We'd love to see them.
Yeah, especially if you're renting, you need to be owning a home right
Absolutely.
Now. I mean, there's no better time to get out of renting, get into a home. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that, and it'll definitely be worth the attendance, and it'll be a lot of fun, I think, as well.
And we feed you.
And we feed you. There you go. Coming up next on the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, we have Aaron Hack with Keller Williams breaking it down for anyone considering the amazing opportunity to buy investment property right here in our local real estate market. Coming up next.
Baseball, the national pastime. It's basic, simple. In a time when, for a lot of Americans, many things are not. Your local Allstate agent can help make things a bit easier by saving you money on car insurance. Right off the bat, safe drivers can save up to 25%. Are you in good hands?
Get big league insurance for less. In Seattle, call Allstate agent Brett Stenmo first. Discount subject to terms and availability. Discount amount subject to change. Actual savings vary. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company, Northbrook, Illinois.
Are you looking for a real estate professional? One who understands the market and does more than open a door, place a sign in your yard? Is it a good time to buy? Is it a good time to sell? Give the Accord team a call at 425-359-4716 to schedule a free consultation. They'll show you what they do different to sell real estate. Call 425-359-4716 or email accordreteam@gmail.com.
This is Aaron Hack with the Accord Real Estate Team, and we're interested in meeting up with you and finding out what's going to make the most sense for your investment portfolio here in the near future. The best number to get a hold of us is 425-359-4716, or our email address is accordreteam@gmail.com. That's accordreteam@gmail.com. Our number once more is 425-359-4716.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on AM 1090. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Dina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on AM 1090 every Saturday at 3 p.m. The purpose of our show, of course, is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in our local real estate market and financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-776-1090 or contact us online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090 or online at themoneyhour.com. So Tina, our first guest, Aaron Hack with Keller Williams Real Estate. Aaron helps run the Accord Real Estate Team. Aaron was born and raised here in the greater Seattle, Snohomish County area.
Yes.
Go Snohomish. And going on almost 14 years of real estate. He's also, as I mentioned, he's not just part of the Accord, he's the leader of the Accord Real Estate Team. And that team has actually is in the top 10% real estate producers in Washington State. He's worked in the construction field and has a knowledge of building, construction, and repairs. He's a real estate investor himself. And for fun, he likes to do competitive rowing, with a local.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
So, and I told Aaron this too. I don't know, did you ever see the movie?
He looks like a rower.
But did you see the movie The Social Network?
Yes, I did. And I think that's where I got some real appreciation for there. That's
but,
hardcore.
But yeah, remember the two twin brothers,
right? Yeah.
That apparently said that Facebook was their idea.
I'm sure
it was. So for our listeners, Aaron looks just like one of those twin brothers.
He does.
Right?
Thank you guys. Appreciate
except for the dimples. He has the dimples. So, Aaron, we're excited to have you in studio today. And it was funny, when we were meeting with you, we realized that all of us have the same, pretty much the same amount of experience, 13, 14, 12 years.
I'm definitely in good company right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I just wanted to say thank you for having me on the show today. As you guys mentioned, I'm going into my 14th year of real estate, and I don't think I've ever, like you mentioned before the break, I don't think we've ever seen an opportunity like we have in front of us today in today's market, just where things are all falling into place. And I highly recommend that people are out there at least getting more information, looking at it, and potentially becoming some investors.
I totally agree with you, Aaron. Why don't we start out with explaining to the listeners, when you're talking about investing or investors, who are we really talking about?
If you were to buy any sort of real estate, technically you would be an investor. And we want to make sure that we're designating this out as an investor who's actually going to purchase, you know, typically more than one property, and also is going to be a good investor. The difference between an investor and a good investor is the good investor actually makes money. It may seem a little simple, and yet it really is what it boils down to.
Oh, that's what it means.
Is we're out there to make sure that we're at least making some sort of profit or moving towards the goal that we're you know, trying to achieve as investors.
Makes sense. So what are some of the major differences in real estate investment and, you know, traditional investing?
Well, what we have here is, you know, more or less it comes down to control. Control of your stocks and real estate would be completely different. If you were to go and buy stock in a company and go up to the CEO of that company and say, hey, let's up production this month so I can sell and sell for a profit, they're going to look at you and think that you're crazy, let alone you can't even get in to see the CEO. And yet, if you're purchasing real estate, you are the CEO, and so you get to make the decision. So how often do you see somebody before they place a house or some sort of property on the market where they go through and, you know, give it put some makeup on it, you know, give it a paint job and do some other items that are going to net them a higher return on their investment? So that's really, that comes down to the control issue there. So it allows you to step into the driver's seat more or less. Also with real estate, you know, number two, I would say is you've got a tangible asset. You know, if you invest in a company and that company goes away, pretty much you're left with virtually nothing. Maybe you got a piece of paper out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet with real estate, even the most destructive thing that could happen, you're still left with the land. And hopefully you've got insurance on it, so that covers any sort of issues that you'd have as far as, you know, being able to replace the investment. Along with the, you know, being in control and being a tangible asset, you have also that you have a tax advantage. Now, October 15th just rolled around, and I know that a lot of people were still taking advantage of their deductions that they got from real estate,
mm-hmm.
as you guys probably well know. Well, it just plays into my mind again that as tax season comes around again in April, that, oh boy, I get a couple extra write-offs that always help to make sure that we're staying in the black. Then last but not least is leverage that comes with real estate. Is you are able to leverage your money so that you're able to get a higher return on investment versus typical stock or some sort of other investments.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, you know, your leverage is you're actually being encouraged right now by the government and by, believe it or not, the banks, with them, you know, offering these really low interest rates, that you're able to leverage a higher return on investment than what you would be in a typical market.
Yeah, and Aaron, I mean, those are really good points. So Aaron's just mentioned kind of, you know, highlights of the difference in their real estate investing versus traditional. You have control over the investment, tangible asset, tax benefits, leverage. And I always like to say, too, that it really is it's the only investment that it's a bonus if it appreciates. I mean, what other investment do we have that, if it appreciates, that's just an added bonus because you actually have somebody else paying for that investment for you. What other investment are you going to go out and bring someone else and say, you know what, will you pay for this for me? And the other key thing that we're seeing right now is, you mentioned the government, whether we're talking about a primary residence, which we know how the government is protecting our primary residence. I mean, they're not helping us out on all that money that we lost in the stock market. But as homeowners that are in distress, and that is the roof over their head and their primary, the government is doing everything possible to help them keep that home. Now, they're also doing it for the renters. Now, they don't talk a lot about that, but when you talk about the HARP program allows for investors that are upside down on their home to take advantage of these low interest rates as well. So again, it's these government programs that are protecting real estate investment. Yeah. They're not protecting stock. Why is that? Because real estate's the heart of our economy. So it is totally different investment than any other investment opportunity out there. Aaron, what about investment in our local market? Why is it so good in our local market here for people to be involved in the investment?
Well, right now, we're looking at several things. We've come back in our prices. I think in 2005, 2006, a lot of people were saying, how much longer is this really going to go up? Well, we've actually taken a step back. Like Tina, you mentioned earlier, was back to 2004. And what we're actually seeing is several of the prices are back to even 2002 or 2000 levels.
Wow.
On certain properties, depending upon what you're looking for. So obviously, the real estate prices that have come down are very significant as far as what we're looking at. Also, again, low interest rates. With the low interest rates that are out there, if you're able to take advantage of those at all, you are, leaps and bounds ahead of where an investor would be or what I was when I was investing in 05, 06. Right now, we're seeing a very odd trend where typically it is cheaper for someone that's looking for a first-time buyer home. This isn't your mansion on the hill, but this is your first-time buyer home. It is actually cheaper to purchase that, have a mortgage on it, and get the tax benefits than what it is to go out and try to rent the exact same home.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this year alone, we've had over 9 buyers that have significantly reduced their amount that their outflow was monthly by moving from a rental into in many cases a nicer home and actually purchasing it with their mortgage payment. They're way ahead. The other thing is I wanted to talk about is, typically, here, as far as what we're seeing is we have a 7-year cycle. And like you had mentioned, Tina, that we should be at the bottom of our market.
I totally believe that.
And along with that, it just shows on a national average that somewhere between 7 to 8 years, we do have this fun roller coaster that we're all on. And we tend to, either hit a high point or a low point. It's about every 7 or 8 years. Now, the odd thing is that the Canadian market is about 3.5 years off from us. And so if you watch what's going on in the Canadian market right now, that is something else that just kind of dictates that we are moving towards a recovery. Now, do we have a crystal ball and can we say, yes, we are in a recovery? No. And yet, if history does repeat itself and real estate over time continues to go up, I think that we're really in a good position right now.
So, Aaron, talk a little bit about the difference between investing in multifamily and residential.
With multifamily, you've got a couple of doors under typically one tax parcel, whereas residential, you do not. Now, that's really obvious. Multifamily is what most people actually think of when they instantly think of real estate investment, because it makes most people think of either a duplex, a fourplex, an apartment building. Now, the reason why those exist is because there are benefits for having those. And typically with the multifamily, your return on investment is typically higher as far as your rental income. Now, when it comes time to sell this property, as far as a multifamily property, you're not selling to the masses. You're selling to typically other investors.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so at that point, you're not seeing as high of a return on your investment when it does come time to sell. Whereas residential, even though you may be taking a little bit lower rental income for the time being, you are typically, if you buy the right property, which we help you out with, you are looking at a higher return when it does come time to sell. And it's much easier to market, and you're dealing with about 90% of the population, allows you to market that property much quicker.
I don't know if you mentioned this, but managing the property, right?
Correct.
Having three residential rental properties versus having a triplex.
You're absolutely right? Absolutely correct. You know, the one of the other benefits with the multifamily is that you have location. You're not driving all over town if you are the one that's managing the property. It allows you to take advantage of one location. Typically, when you have any sort of maintenance, if you do need maintenance on the property, it's much easier to get that scheduled and done to 3, 4, 5 units, whatever it is, all at once. There is definitely economies of return on there.
So, yeah, I think multifamily is a great investment. That if you have the down payment, so a lot of people are going to start, correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, you'll start with a single family home for the lower down payment, build some equity, and then you can work that into a higher property to where you've got the equity position to go in, correct?
Correct.
So I want to go back to the opportunity here with prices low, because this is a call to action. If you're listening and you kind of missed in what Aaron said, we talked about during Money Chat that on an average, we're probably back kind of around maybe where we were in 2004. And this is just kind of throwing out some average numbers there. Aaron, in some markets is saying, I mean, we really could be back in prices of 2000. So how is this an opportunity for you as a listener getting into the investment market if you can get prices at so low? And Aaron, I learned a rule of thumb that if you take the value of a property, and let's just use 200,000. I like to use numbers because I'm in
mortgages. I like even numbers too.
Okay. 200,000. And I was given kind of a rule of thumb that 0.75% of the value might be a good estimate for rent. So on a $200,000 home, at that calculation would be maybe $1,500 in rent. Am I kind of in there possibly in the right range?
You are.
Okay. So with that, I know what the mortgage payment would be. If you need a 20% down payment, because that's the only thing with investment, you've got to have a little bit of equity into it now. 20% down payment, we'd have a loan amount. Let's just use 4% interest rate. Investment interest rates, and I'm not here to quote interest rates today because it's all based on qualifying. But if you have good credit, good income, you should be able to get in under a 4% interest rate on investment property. So let's use 4%. $763 for principal and interest. Taxes and insurance in there, PITI, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. $973 a month for this $200,000 property with a 20% equity position into the home. There's a call to action. If your mortgage payment was $973 a month and you could rent that at $1,500 a month, where has there been an opportunity that you could really not only cash flow, but actually, truly, remember what we said, the appreciation is just an added bonus.
Oh, absolutely.
You are in a position to get into the market right now and have money coming into your pocket. I mean, it's just an amazing time. If you want us to connect you directly with Aaron, give the show a call, 1-888-776-1090. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090. Or you can always reach us online at themoneyhour.com. Just ask for Aaron's information. We will directly connect you with him to talk about investments. So, Aaron, question. Why
Sure.
isn't everybody investing in the investment market right now, today?
A lot of it comes down to just where we're at right now.
Okay.
Is we're just coming out of recession. And so there are a lot of people that got burned, a lot of people that overbought. There's a lot of people that have been taken
out. They leveraged?
They leveraged, or they didn't leverage. Maybe they took money out of the house and used it as an ATM.
There you go.
Versus actually treating it as an investment. And so with those numbers being as high as they are, it does take a lot of the potential investors out of the market, which also then brings up rents, which continue to increase right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've been seeing, in many cases, a lot of larger investment companies have upped their rents 10 to 20% in the last couple of years. And that allows us to, you know, all of a sudden, the rest of us as investors, as smaller time investors, we are able to take advantage of that and move people into homes at less than what they're paying for rent, like we mentioned earlier.
I think this is and I'd be curious to know your opinion about this as far as, you know, the average age right now you're seeing of people who are actually pulling the trigger on buying investment properties. But my gut feeling would be, I would say this is a great opportunity for a lot of baby boomers. I think
they were
absolutely more conservative, you know, these past, you know, 7-8 years than a lot of us, maybe younger folks were. And I can just speak for my folks and their parents and stuff. None of them are running around buying multiple properties, you know, 5-6 years ago.
They just weren't.
You know, they sat there, they watched all of us do it. And now they're sitting here, and these baby boomers, they've got the credit, they've got the assets, they've got the income, the job stability. I mean, they're sitting really pretty to be, you know, just cherry picking investment opportunities and properties right now. And I don't know if you've seen a lot of that, but my gut would say that would be a great demographic of people that that should be looking at this?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of these baby boomers are not seeing the return on investment that they would like in some of their other investments they have. And there are many of them that are moving into, you know, the real estate market again. You're right, though. A lot of these baby boomers that are people that were able to stand back and kind of watch the 7-year roller coaster take its fun up and down.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are really making a profit in this market that we're seeing right now.
Yep. So, Aaron, our time is almost over once again. Never enough time. What would be your last and final advice and tip for anyone that's listening right now on the subject of investments?
Number one rule to follow right now, and that I like to say, is either cash flow or no go. And
I like that.
That is, I guess, is probably the most important thing that you can do. And then also come up with a goal or a plan or a map to get to where you want to be at.
Yeah, you had mentioned earlier before we started the show, literally you help people come up with a business plan for investing. So
that's what we want to do, is we actually want people to come in. We will meet with you face to face and get to know you, what your plans are, and we're going to help you build that roadmap that's going to get you to that point where your investment portfolio is paying for all the fun things that you want to be doing.
That's awesome. So in closing, rents have never increased as consistently as high as we're seeing them right now.
Correct.
So what do you take from that? If you're renting, you need to own.
You do need to
own
right
now. And if you're
a
current owner, you need to continue to build your real estate portfolio and get those renters in to take care of that investment for you.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good way to wrap up with our segment with you.
Thank you.
Aaron, thank you so much for coming in studio. It was a lot of fun having you here.
Thanks, Aaron.
And coming up next on the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, you will not want to miss out, Kim Dales with Windermere Real Estate. If you're a buyer in today's market, or you're thinking of possibly being one, you need to know about multiple offers. Do you think it's a seller's market or a buyer's market? Find out next after this short break.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments and unsure about the road ahead? Magnum Law Group helps families just like yours navigate through the foreclosure avoidance process. Are you underwater on your home and unsure what to do? Magnum Law Group will help you understand your options. Are you facing foreclosure and need to stop a trustee sale? Magnum Law Group has success in doing this and may be able to help you too. If you're tired of dealing with the banks and getting turned down for loan modification, Magnum Law Group will take on the banks for you and lead you through the process for the best possible outcome. They lead the competition with superior knowledge and expertise.
This is Craig from Magnum. You can reach us at 425-605-6393 or at www.magnumlawgroup.com. See you at the next seminar.
Having been a registered nurse for 20 years, the last 10 at Seattle Children's, and a realtor for 11, Kim Dales has a huge amount of experience working with people, especially people who are under a great deal of stress. Although the differences between working in the medical field and in real estate are obvious, both patients and clients expect an individual that is confident, knowledgeable, and accomplished at what they do. Kim was calm in health emergencies, and she is calm and decisive when it comes to real estate transactions. She's not afraid of discouraging her clients from a purchase if it won't be in their best interest, and she's not afraid to tell a seller what needs to be done to prepare the home for the market. Kim Dales prides herself in being an honest, hardworking broker. No malarkey. If you aren't currently working with a broker and are buying or selling a home, contact Kim today at kodales@windermere.com or 206-235-7772. That's 206-235-7772.
Now back to the Money Hour on AM 1090 with your host, Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on AM 1090 every Saturday at 3 p.m. sharp. The purpose of our show, of course, is to keep helping our listeners understand what's really going on in our local real estate market and financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-776-1090 or contact us online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090 or online at themoneyhour.com. Tina, I'm excited. And that was great with Aaron, wasn't it?
It was great with
Aaron.
That
was good information. We definitely have to have Aaron back. But I am excited to introduce our next guest, Kim Dales with Windermere. And she's the managing broker with the Sandpoint office. And Kim has been in real estate for the past 11 years. She's been a registered nurse for over 20 years. And she still participates in nursing, but it's on a travel level. I don't want to say travel, but she goes basically
third world countries. I would love to be able to give back something like that.
Yeah, she chips in her time with nursing on these special mission trips. So I think that's fantastic. But Kim quotes that she is calm in health emergencies, and she's also just as calm and decisive when it comes to real estate transactions. So I think that's a great way of putting that together. And she's also a five-star agent, and she's been voted for the last 5 years in a row through Seattle Magazine, Best Client Customer Satisfaction. So Kim, welcome, and we're really excited to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm excited also.
Yeah, and Kim, I'm really excited about your topic because in our local market here, a buzz, good or bad for what it is, buzzword out there is multiple offer. What is going on? Are we seeing them here?
Well, you know, we
How
really...
How much are we seeing them here?
Well, more than the media would tell you, that's for sure. I would say last spring, we started to see a resurgence of the multiple offer situation, especially in the greater Seattle area. And I think it really took a lot of buyers off guard because they were being very cautious in their offers, making offers much below the purchase price. Right. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they had to compete.
They probably had to lose a couple houses first to finally start circling back and start listening to your advice.
Sometimes that can happen. And it's painful. It's painful because in a multiple offer situation, many times the buyer has to pay some upfront costs. They have to do pre-inspections. They do a sewer scope. There's a lot that's put into it. If you don't get the house, you're not going to get that money back.
Absolutely. So, Kim, I asked the listeners if they were listening, did they think that we're in a buyer's market or a seller's market? Tell our listeners what market we're actually in right now.
We are in a seller's market.
Did you hear that? The seller's market.
The hard part for buyers, though, is there are so many buyers right now because just as Aaron stated, you know, people can start making investments now. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are incredibly low. So we have a huge number of buyers. And sadly, our inventory is lower than it's been in quite a few years.
Yeah.
So this has really caused this whole multiple offer situation to come back up again.
So my question would be, are buyers responding to being placed in multiple offer scenarios? How are they responding? How is their attitude? And what are you seeing? I mean, after the initial shock and awe.
I think there are two groups of buyers. There are those that are more risk takers and they're willing to compete, kind of like an athlete would be willing to compete. And there are those that just shy away. I've had clients write an offer, find out that they're going to be in a multiple offer situation, and just not make the offer. Mm-hmm. So it's just it's a tolerance. You know, no one wants to lose. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's shocking because we've had all these years of you could just kind of wait and watch that list price go down and have another price reduction, and then they come in.
Have you in the last year, have you represented a buyer where it became a multiple offer situation and you started seeing maybe some escalator clauses going up and you actually had to you know, tell your client, you know, I'm not going to let you buy it at this. It's now above what I believe the house is really worth. Have you seen these escalations go up to above what the house is actually worth? Or have you just had buyers that have like exited before it hit where, you know, that the house really should be selling?
You know, we have that conversation on the front end because once you get involved in the whole multiple offer situation, there's so much emotion for these buyers, especially if they've lost a few homes. So even before the offer is written, even before we decide on what I call a cap for the multiple offer on an escalator clause, we sit down and we have that heart to heart. How much is this house worth to you? At the end of the day, are you really willing to pay that much? And if you get it and it's yours, are you going to have buyer's remorse? Mm-hmm. And usually they are pretty calm about that. You know, once we have that conversation and try to take some of the emotion out of it, it's really hard. It's the biggest investment most people make in their entire life.
Right.
So we've mentioned a couple of times escalator clause. Can you let our listeners know exactly what that is?
Escalator clauses are really only used when you're in a multiple offer situation because obviously if you're the only offer on the table, you don't need to use an escalator clause. But if you know there are four other buyers who are vying for one specific house, there's a form that the Northwest MLS and all of our real estate companies use that's called an escalator form. And on that form, you write down the amount you're willing to pay, and then you write down at what increments you're willing to go up to. And there's a cap. A few years back in 2005 and 2006, I saw offers where buyers said no cap, which was total insanity because it could just get ratcheted up beyond belief.
Right.
But there is a cap, obviously, because you can only afford so much and you just have to pace yourself.
Yeah, and just out of curiosity, how often is the cap of what they think they want to spend versus, you know, your opinion of what that property really is worth? How often does that differ tremendously?
I think probably I'm a little more conservative because, you know, they do get away with themselves. I mean, they get very anxious and they just really want it. And there might be, you know, if there are spouses involved, maybe one spouse is like, you know, we'll go up 10,000 and that's it. And the other one's like, oh no, please, let's go up another 5,000. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to step out. You're going to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Good plan.
And then I'm going to come back in and we're going to decide what to do. Because once I'm presenting their offer, they're not in the room with me.
Right.
So.
And just so if you're listening today, I think it's an excellent strategy, plus especially in this market with the multiple offers, to go in there with that addendum. And it's important to understand that they have to have another offer that's been presented that is over that amount of price, correct, Kim? So if they're saying that they're going to continue to go up 5,000 from their base price, in order for it to go up to that 5,000, what are the requirements for that other contract?
So let's say that Aaron and I are both presenting an offer.
Okay.
And that my offer, the house is listed at 500,000. And my offer is 500,000 with an escalation clause of $1,500 increments up to $515,000.
Okay.
Now let's say Aaron's offer actually is $502,000, but his clients only want to escalate up to $510,000. Because we're doing $1,500 increments up to, you know, $515,000, my clients will get this house at $511,500.
Okay.
So that's how that works.
Yeah. And that's what a great strategy when you know that there's multiple offers.
It is a great strategy. Yeah. The only time it's not a great strategy is when you are so close to another offer that the listing agent sometimes comes back to you and says, well, we're all just so close. Why don't you guys just write down your highest and best offer? Then you suddenly have to get back in touch with your buyers. And I feel the same way as the buyers. You feel like you're a bit taken.
Right.
Sure.
I was told I needed to say full of malarkey since we just heard that last week. So I'm going to use that term right now. It's kind of full of malarkey. You know, yeah. It's really unfair, I think. I think you have to pick, you have to choose. It's hard to choose.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you have 5 and 6 offers and sometimes they're $1,000 or $2,000 apart. But that's just, you have to make a choice. And I think to drag everyone back in and to ask for their highest and best offer is a bit unfair.
Yeah. So it's like anything else, if you can go in with preparation and be really prepared in what you need to do to move forward and be successful, there is challenges when interest rates are historically low. There is challenges when you're getting your price for your property at close to bottom of the market. The challenge is there's a lot of people just like you that see the benefit of buying. So
right.
You're going to be bidding against other people. And it's all about preparation. What are some other preparations that a buyer can do ahead of time to really prepare for a multiple offer situation?
Well, I feel that some of the strategies really have to do with their agent. Quite honestly, it's important if they find out, or even when they're interviewing an agent for a first time, especially in this market, that they know the agent is competent and has been involved in multiple offer situations, because there's a strategy to it. For instance, I was in a multiple offer situation where I was the listing agent, so my clients were getting 5 offers. And it was a house in Wallingford. It was a very, very nice house. The house went tens of thousands of dollars above the asking price. But one of the offers that was in this multiple offer situation came in $25,000 less than the asking price. And we all kind of looked at each other thinking, now why would this agent tell his clients to do that, his mm-hmm. or her clients to do that, knowing that there were 4 other offers and it's a multiple offer situation? And I felt bad for these buyers because they had done all the other right things. They had done a pre-inspection. They had done a sewer scope at the property. But in the end, the house, I think, was $600,000+. They wrote their offer $25,000 less.
Wow.
And they had an escalator, but the escalator barely even came up to the original list price. So they really didn't have a chance.
So I think that's a key point. In hiring a realtor, especially in this environment with multiple offers, you're hiring the experience of negotiation. That is one of the biggest areas of why you have to have a realtor and why you have to have a strong realtor that can work with this. Now, what about also on that same note, reputation in the industry? And I think people forget about that the realtor that you're hiring for their reputation that they have in the industry, who they know. Do you agree with that, Kim, that that's important? In choosing?
No, I think it really is important. And I think that's why all of us build a lot of our business on referral. You get a referral or you don't get a referral
mm-hmm.
based on how you represented that last client.
Yep. And that other agent on the other side of the transaction is not going to want to bring you in if you have a bad reputation in the industry. Whether it's bad reputation that you're hard to work with, because who wants to work with somebody on the other side that's hard to work with, or somebody that doesn't have experience we just mentioned, those are huge, huge players in the market.
Well, and I think that's kind of an unspoken, you know, situation.
Absolutely.
That we have. So if, you know, Aaron and I had done a deal together, let's say, and he's one of the five offers, and I don't know the other four agents, and he's come in professionally, you know, written everything up, has bullet points for us, you know, I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable working for someone or with someone that I've already met.
Yep.
I've had a transaction with. I know him. I see his signs. He's obviously active in my market than someone I've never met before.
And you guys hung out in studio together. What's better than that?
I know. Now we know each other. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was going to chime in and say, it's interesting. Like, look, if you were a person who's been wrongfully accused of something, legally, right, and you're in court and you have to get a defender, an attorney to represent you, it's all about the attorney's reputation and what kind of cases mm-hmm. they've won, and does that attorney know the prosecutor, and do they know the judge, and do they know, you know, how the whole game works, right? You're not going to go in there and say, give me the cheapest lawyer there is. I want somebody that doesn't have any experience. No, you're gonna go after and try to hire. Now, what's fortunate about the difference between hiring an attorney and a real estate agent is simply the fact, look, the best attorneys out there can cost you an arm and a leg. But when it comes to hiring a realtor, you're not paying for, you know, whether it's a realtor that's had 20 years of experience, 15, 20 years, and is the best in their market, what they do, versus a brand new agent who's got 6 months under their belt, right? The cost to hire that real estate agent is no different. It's the same. And that's what makes it very unique. So
that's a good point.
It absolutely all is about the reputation and the experience, because it is, the real estate can become a game. It can become like a courtroom where you got multiple players involved and a lot of things going on. And that's why I think it really does make sense to make sure you're working with the best.
And so on that note, Mike, that's why I enjoy doing the radio station, because when is there ever an opportunity that we can literally get the best of the best in our local market in every area regarding financing? And today it's real estate. How else can we get Kim and Aaron both here in studio, except for the fact that we have a radio show? And so we've got the best of the best right here sharing it with
it's
our listeners. I
hour.
Love it. If you want to connect with them, go online to themoneyhour.com. We'll connect you directly with Kim. Get through this, the multiple offer. You are absolutely going to run into it. Or you can give us a call at 1-888-776-1090 and we will connect you directly with Kim. So Kim, what strategy would you employ if you were representing a buyer in a multiple offer situation? I mean, we've talked about some of them. What have we missed here?
Well, it becomes rather obvious if it's a very popular house. You know, your buyers will pick that up immediately. They'll go to the open house and give you a call and say, oh my gosh, there were 40 people at this open house this afternoon. I think there's going to be multiple offers. The other thing a selling agent will do is they will list on the Northwest Multiple that they're waiting to look at offers. Now, that can backfire, because if it's an overpriced house, that day can come and go and that seller's not going to get any offers. But that does give us a sense of what may happen down the road. So immediately, if my clients have an interest in a house, first thing I'll do is I'll call the listing agent and I'll ask them, so I heard you had a great open house today. Do you foresee anyone coming back a second time? Are you anticipating multiple offers? You know, is there anything about the house I need to know that I can't figure out by researching it on the internet? And I introduce myself to them, because there's a good chance that I'm going to meet them face to face. And that's the other piece with a multiple offer situation. I think in our world right now, everything is so fast paced that, you know, people will just scan and email their offers in. If your agent is doing that, they're not representing you. This is a huge, huge transaction. They need to be there. They need to represent you, and they need to present that offer in person.
Yeah, very important.
It's very important because, you know, you're representing them. You're telling the seller about them and why they want the house, and it becomes so much more personal for them. So I track it to that very day. I probably call way too many times, and I probably, in some ways, irritate the agent a little bit too much, but I know where we stand. When I walk in that door, I know there are three other offers. I know two of them did pre-inspections. I know one didn't. I know, you know, a lot. I know if there is an escalator clause, and then I prep my clients for that. So I think that's really important. We make a lot of money in this industry.
Yep.
We should give a lot of service.
But, you know, on the flip side of that, and that's great that you do that, but you also must, you're speaking from experience with your strategy on this, because you, as a listing agent, you, I'm sure, have had offers come in, and you, for one, for whatever reason or another, you maybe have bonded or connected with one particular real estate agent over another. And even if there's maybe higher offers that come in, and of course, as an agent, you have to present all offers, but it, you know, it comes to a gut feeling, right? And sometimes just because there's another offer coming in that might be higher doesn't necessarily mean that that's the better offer. And maybe especially if you're kind of getting red flags with the agent, you know, they're not returning your calls, there's no communication there, the offer was written sloppy, you know, even though it's maybe technically higher on paper, you might end up encouraging your sellers, if they ask you your professional opinion, which they will, of course, to go with maybe a lower offer, but it's because you have a stronger feeling about that agent and the connection that you had, knowing that that's actually going to be a transaction that's going to close and close on time and get done. So I can see why when you're representing the buyer, it's so important for you to, you know, to make that personal connection with the listing agent. Because you're right, it's just no different than being in a like, again, I hate to go back to the courtroom again, but, you know, attorneys know how to work with each other. And it seems like that would be a great strategy for you to connect. So warning, if you're with a real estate agent, you know, their personality and how you see them interact with people is just as important as maybe the amount of years that they've been in real estate. Would you agree?
No, I would totally agree. I think it's what the rapport is. And also, you know, agents know you, and they know you because you're out there and you're going to open houses and you're going to opens during the week and you're calling them and they see your card and they see you come up on their key box and they get to know you. It's that's almost like a subliminal message. You know, they see your name enough.
Yeah.
They get to know you, even if they don't know you.
So, Kim, let's wrap it up here for the listeners and leave them with an explanation. Why are we seeing so many multiple offers right now?
Once again, I think there are the three major factors that we touched on earlier, and that would be we have an increase in buyers, and actually these are very qualified buyers because banks are making them be more qualified than they were a few years ago when we got into all that difficulty.
Have to have a job
have to pay your bills.
No more malarkey.
That's right. There's a decrease in the housing inventory, so that means there are less houses and more buyers, and the interest rates are so low that I just think buyers are very anxious because they know that it can't go much lower, and they want to purchase now.
That's a good point, Kim. I want to give my final just really quickly on the lending side of it. Make sure when you're making an offer, your lender makes a letter specific to the property. Best thing in multiple offer is to always say that they're more than qualified to purchase the home located at such and such address, no price. And then lenders, why aren't you picking up the phone and calling the listing agent? Pick up the phone and say you've got an awesome buyer that's qualified, ready to go. Just little simple things. As a lender, I never see loan officers do that. Mike and I do it. If you need our assistance in lending, give us a call. 1-888-776-1090. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090. Or you can reach us online at themoneyhour.com. I am excited, Mike, for next week. Oh my gosh, popular demand. We have Lloyd Herr back in, King County Assessor. So if you want to know anything and everything about your property taxes, what is going on with taxes, you will not want to miss Lloyd here in studio next week. We also have Gene Roberts from Old Republican Home Protection. Home warranty, what is it? How much is it? How do you get the seller to pay for it? What is it covered? It's going to be an awesome show next week as well.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, Tina, another show, another great time. Thank you. So this is Mike Mercer signing off for the Mortgage Diva, Miss Tina Mitchell.
And this is Tina Mitchell signing off for the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. Enjoy your weekend, everyone. Thank you again for being here with Mike and I and with our guest in studio. We look forward to having you back next Saturday, same time, same place, 3 p.m.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.